This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Hollywood has a recovery problem, thanks to such TV shows as Celebrity Rehab and Intervention and many celebrity memoirs and feature films across the decades. Addiction recovery, especially alcohol addiction, is largely framed around the idea that 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous are not just the best choice, but really the only choice. Gabrielle Glazer, investigative journalist and author of Her Best Kept Secret, Why Women Drink and How They Can Regain Control, believes that the 12-step model can do more harm than good, especially to women, and that Hollywood isn't helping.
A retired Harvard psychiatrist named Lance Dotis just did a big takeout called The Sober Truth that looked at surveys and studies over the years and analyses of people who had been in rehab. And that book said that it was successful 5 to 8% of the time.
But I personally know so many people who have used the program and have done well.
Exactly. But you also know a lot of people for whom yoga works really well or for whom Catholicism works really well. But that's not science. That's anecdote. That's narrative.
And this, you suggest, is a very narrative-driven concept.
We in this country adore redemption narratives. Our whole history is based on redemption narratives. Amazing grace, I was blind but now can see, and that is also AA's narrative. You start sneaking drinks, you lose your job, you hit bottom, and then you find AA and you recover.
And there is a lot of what's been called kick-lit celebrity literature about beating your addiction.
Celebrity literature, memoirs about addiction.
Eric Clapton's autobiography.
There you go. Rob Lowe. You know, a lot of famous people have worked the program, and it works for them. And therefore, that gives kind of star appeal. We don't hear from the people it doesn't work for.
Well, some of them are dead.
Dead, right.
Amy Winehouse, Whitney Houston, Lindsay Lohan, you have to worry about.
Right.
So we should understand the program as not having worked for them.
Right. Instead of their failure at not working the program correctly.
Why would we think it's their failure?
Well, early in the Bible of Alcoholics Anonymous, the book that was first written and published in 1939, here's what AA tells readers and potential members. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves.
Is this why you think that the program doesn't serve women as well as men?
Women are twice as likely to have been diagnosed with depression or anxiety disorders, and they're far more likely to have been sexually abused. And all of those are risk factors for women. In AA, those are considered outside issues. When my book came out, I heard from hundreds of women who had been discouraged from talking about those issues. And also, if you're prescribed an antidepressant by your doctor, which, by the way, has been shown in many cases to help people stop drinking, you're often considered not sober within the program.
If only 8 out of 100 succeed in this program, why does it have such a fantastic rep?
It's very entrenched in our legal system, our medical establishment, and also our popular culture. In the early 1940s, there was a Saturday Evening Post story about AA that sold hundreds of thousands of copies, and interest really took off throughout the 1940s and 50s. At dinner time, when everybody was watching the news, people who were members of AA were on local TV stations wearing Lone Ranger masks, describing their experiences. And it was very helpful for the organization, and it was no doubt helpful for people who needed help with their drinking. It was an important milestone, culturally and clinically.
But I think even more, it must be the big screen, right? There's lots of movies that AA appears in.
So we had the Thin Man movies in the 1930s where alcohol was just a giant caper. Myrna Loy at one point sits down at the table and says, I can drink as much as he can.
Say, how many drinks have you had?
This will make 6 martinis.
All right. Will you bring me 5 more martinis? Leo, line them right up here.
Yes, ma'am.
AA hit Hollywood in 1945. There was a woman who was one of the first women in AA to become sober long-term. Her name was Marty Mann, and she was a PR genius. She worked at Marshall Fields in Chicago. She came from a very wealthy family. Her family lost money during the stock market crash. She had a decade of really wandering, and she drank way too much. And she found AA when she was in a sanitarium. A doctor gave her a book, the Big Book. And initially, she rejected it as being far too religious. But she had had a suicide attempt, and somehow she picked it up again and thought, okay, I'll try this. It worked for her, and she wanted to get the message out. She started reaching out to radio producers. She worked with newspapermen, television writers, movie producers, screenwriters, and it really, really worked.
The Lost Weekend, starring Ray Milland.
And that depicted a harrowing journey of this guy who was a writer trying to fix his writer's block.
Come on, I need that liquor. I want it and I'm going to get it, understand? I'm going to walk out of here with that quarter rye, one way or another.
And that was written by a member of AA, whose name was Charles Jackson.
And it's directed by Billy Wilder.
Jackson and Billy Wilder did work with Marty Mann to portray what happens in an alcoholic's downfall in a depiction on screen. And then, huge sea change again in terms of movies, because AA itself was depicted in a movie called The Days of Wine and Roses. It featured Jack Lemmon, Jack Klugman, and Lee Remick. Jack Lemmon has a drinking problem. He brings his girlfriend slash wife along with him for the ride. She doesn't like the taste of alcohol, but he quickly produces Brandy Alexanders, which are sweet.
Oh, no, thank you.
No, that's all right. That's fine.
But
they're special for you. It's chocolate. Go on.
Oh, it's good. Ooh. It is.
And they slide into this terrible descent of alcohol dependence themselves. And in that film, AA was a protagonist. It's got spooky music during the drunken scenes, out of control scenes. And then when the Jack Lemmon, Joe Clay character goes to AA, suddenly there are these triumphant violins. Jack Klugman appears. He is the sponsor of Jack Lemmon and brings him to meetings. You see these meetings portrayed for the first time on the large screen. My name is blank, and I'm an alcoholic. It's easy to forget that enormous numbers of people went to the movies in the 1950s and 60s. So everybody was consuming that at the same time.
And AA is still popping up on the big screen now?
The movie with Andy Garcia and Meg Ryan, When a Man Loves a Woman, 28 Days with Sandra Bullock.
You know, if you really try, Daniel, you could ruin the experience for the entire patient population.
I'm having a bad day. So if it is not too much to ask of you people, will you just back the off?
Excellent work. Really excellent work. Mm-hmm. Good sharing, everybody.
And then there's this movie starring Will Smith from 2008 called Hancock. He's an addicted, rather out-of-control superhero who's forced to go to meetings. He's basically silent through all of them, but then he speaks one time, and he's cured.
Let it heal.
Come on, man, try it.
You coming here all these days? You don't have anything to share?
I'm Hancock, and I drink and stuff.
All right, thanks for sharing.
All right.
That's awesome.
That's a clap.
Yeah.
What do you think is the least helpful part of these depictions of AA?
I think showing that it's the only way to get better. Because if the program doesn't work for you, it's really not that easy to find alternative methods. Unless you really know how to work your way through the federal database of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, I mean, who's going to do that? And it makes them feel totally desperate.
Has Hollywood evolved at all in its depiction of the addict?
I would argue that it really hasn't. An addict is depicted as something that is going to end up on the street, in jail, or dead. What the federal data show us is that of the 18 million people who drink at risky levels, 10% of those are people who are really severely dependent, who shouldn't ever drink again. We use AA's yardstick of abstaining for the rest of your life, going to meetings. You know, you can't even have a bite of rum frosting at Christmas time or you're going to go on a bender. The data show us that that's just not true. The methods that have been shown to work for what's now called substance use disorder, is cognitive behavioral therapy, something called motivational interviewing, which helps people resolve their ambivalence about their behavior of choice. And there are drugs that help cut cravings. And that's frankly really not that interesting to show on screen.
As you've written, something like 10% or more of the people in AA have actually been mandated to go there by a judge.
And that started with the establishment of drug courts in the early 1980s. So for the past 30 years, about 12% of AA's own membership are people who don't necessarily want to be there. There are some data that show that 12%, they fare worse than if they were just sent home.
Do you think that the judges were affected by the Hollywood portrayals of AA as a kind of cure-all?
I do. I also think it's a free program. It might help some people. And there's a huge prison overcrowding problem in our country. I spoke to several judges in my reporting who sheepishly told me, yeah, you know what? I know it really doesn't work for that many people, but we don't know what else to do with these folks.
What's it going to take for AA to no longer be the go-to first choice?
Well, this is kind of a wonky answer, but the Affordable Care Act, 62 million Americans now have coverage for alcohol use disorder who didn't have it in 2013. That's a big deal. And the more we talk about this, the more people will learn, okay, wait a minute, it may be not just me. Maybe it's not my fault that this program didn't work for me.
Your lack of moral fiber?
Your lack of moral fiber, your lack of constitutional honesty with yourself is not necessarily the problem. Maybe the program just didn't make sense for you.
Gabrielle, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Gabrielle Glaser is author of Her Best Kept Secret, Why Women Drink and How They Can Regain Control, and author of the upcoming article in The Atlantic, The False Gospel of Alcoholics Anonymous. We reached out to Alcoholics Anonymous for comment. It gave us a statement that said, AA has no opinion regarding scientific studies or research. As a non-professional fellowship, AA neither gathers nor distributes this information, nor do we express any opinions about it. I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, you know, I just don't have enough podcasts in my life. Tell me about it. Well, how about one that can accompany your TV binges? How about a podcast called On House of Cards, hosted by me? I've pulled in a pile of old White House hands, policy experts, reporters, and even the show's creator, Bo Willimon, to assess, giggle, and yes, occasionally sneer at one of our guiltiest pleasures.
We wanted to create a fictional character. I mean, clearly there are some parallels that could be drawn with Vladimir Putin, but we also...
Come on.
Including their initials,
Well, of course they're right. It's got to be best for the party.
Especially since he's likely to murder somebody between now and then.
I was involved in a number of summits, both as a participant and as a correspondent. And nothing was anywhere near as exciting or dramatic as this, maybe with one exception.
Mm-hmm.
That famous summit in Reykjavik, Iceland, between Reagan and Gorbachev.
I can remember being the only woman sitting at the press table and having to listen to these guys talk about, you know, I have a good joke, I can't tell it because she's here.
Right.
I mean, all the sort of stupid cliche things that you hear, they all happen.
How likely is a scenario like that?
Zero.
I was going to say minus 10, actually.
It's so stupid that it makes the way the United States conducts diplomacy look good.
It starts next week. You have to subscribe to our podcast to get it. So go to onthemedia.org.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Meera Sharma, Kimmy Regler, Kasia Mihailovich, Andrew Chug, and Julia Hsu. We had more help from Jesse Brenneman, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was David Grinbaum.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.